The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expertise on vitamins and supplements to help build immunity at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
A lot of people texting in admiringly, I have to say, about Sister Stan's kind of inclusive approach to religion. Adrienne, who's a yoga teacher in Wexford, is saying that her approach is completely resonant of the yogic tradition, which the Catholic Church traditionally tends to abhor. Gary pointing out, can you imagine where the Catholic Church would be now if Sister Stan was Pope? I think if Father Dougal was here, he'd say, ah, Ted, is she a real nun at all? So anyway, time to look at what's on our screens, big and small, for the next week now. And I'm joined by writer Henrietta McCurvey and film correspondent for the Irish Times, Donald Clark. Good afternoon, guys.
Hello.
Before we get into what's on this week, Donald, the Oscars tonight at 1 a.m. So let's get your key insights. Not happy. You're not happy about it, I assume. Everyone seems to be unhappy about some aspect of the Oscars. I presume you're particularly unhappy.
I suppose they always are. But well, this year, essentially what's happened is that the Oscars have been in decline in terms of viewing figures. I mean, I actually think their selections have been pretty good the last 10 or 20 years, but in terms of viewing figures, they've been in decline for a decade. Obviously, everyone knew that last year they would be disastrous. Of course they were going to be disastrous. Nobody had seen the films. They hadn't been properly released. And the ceremony was a slightly cobbled together affair that couldn't have celebrities in place. And so obviously it wasn't going to be as watched. Obviously it was going to be the least watched ever, and it was. This has resulted, however, in a panic where the current producers have decided they're going to do everything to make it appeal to a wider audience, in inverted commas. So they brought in a Twitter poll. You can now vote on your favourite Oscar moment, which of course immediately brought out the fans, because that's how those things work these days. So Johnny Depp fans were suddenly, you know, voting his latest kind of, you know, ho-hum film and so forth. More, I mean, that's kind of a silly thing, which is not particularly damaging to the Oscars. We can forget about it. More damaging is the fact that they decided to award 8 of the categories that clearly they regard as less important, an hour before the ceremony officially starts, so not live, and then they'll be cut into the ceremony as you're watching live. And the notion,
I thought they always did that, didn't they?
No, they've always been live.
Maybe
live.
I just watch I watch a package.
Well, yes, thing I should say actually is this matters to almost no one this side of the Atlantic, because only me and about 5 maniacs will be watching it live anyway.
Okay. But it matters outraged at home,
exactly,
you and 5 other people.
But it matters integrity of the Oscars. Essentially, they are turning around to the editors, to the best score nominees, and saying you weren't, because let's face it, there's no way they're going to be giving Jessica Chastain or Nicole Kidman her award in the hour before the ceremony.
And Henrietta, you quite like those kind of the lesser awards, don't you?
Yeah, the categories that the Academy has decided to shunt into this 1 hour when everybody else is on the red carpet are the ones that I actually really like, because it includes editing, makeup and hairstyling, original score, live action short, sound. I mean, sound is an amazing, makes an amazing difference
to a film.
Probably
much more important than we realise.
Well,
yeah,
up to 90% of the sound effects on a blockbuster are added afterwards.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The whole business of sound design, it's very skilled, and yet these people, you know, are going to get their award while other people are twirling in the red carpet.
Yeah, but they're not celebrities, I suppose. Yeah.
Though Jessica Chastain has said that she will skip the red carpet in order to be there, because her makeup and hair team are up for an award.
Yeah, and she knows she'll need them again.
And they're favourites as well.
I mean, they are favourites.
By the way, did you see Sean Penn last night?
I think he's ranting about melting down his Oscar. Is this right?
If they have decided not to let President Zelensky appear at the Oscars, Sean Penn thinks everyone should boycott it. And when he gets back to America from Poland, where he is now, he's gone like Colonel Kurtz. He seemed completely deranged at this stage. He went into Ukraine and he's gone up the river, so to speak. When he gets back to America, he's going to smelt down his Oscar publicly.
Well, that will finish the Oscars off after 93 years. That'll finally put the nail in the coffin. Sean Penn melting down his Oscar.
So listen, Irish interest, Donald, we have Belfast, Ciarán Hinds, Jesse Buckley for The Lost Daughter, and Van Morrison as well.
Yes, I mean, sadly, I mean, it is the most Irish Oscars since 2016, when we had that famous year with Brooklyn and Room. Unfortunately, rather like that year, it doesn't look anyone's likely to win. I mean, that year only Ben Cleary famously won for short film. The only one in which I think they're competitive is probably best original screenplay, which Branagh could win. He's in a, I would say, 50-50 fight with Paul Thomas Anderson for Licorice Pizza. I think he could slip through there. But, I mean, we also should say we don't know yet if he's attending. Because both yes. Kieran Hines and Kenneth Branagh tested positive for COVID last week after the BAFTAs. No one's entirely sure if it was at the BAFTAs.
Okay.
But a bunch of people
and
did.
And did Jamie Dornan hold up in New York? Did he test positive as well?
No, he didn't. No, but he's not nominated, of course. I mean, I'm not sure if he's going. I assume he is going. He was at the Oscar Wilde Awards on Thursday. So I presume he's probably been invited. I mean, he may get Kenneth Branagh's ticket if Branagh doesn't get through. But Branagh, I think, will be there. I mean, Jessie Buckley will be back. I mean, she's such a talented actress, all-rounder. She'll be back. But she would be probably the fifth most likely out of five in Best Supporting Actress, I would say. Okay. So.
Best movie? Surely not The Power of the Dog, like, which was it was an okay TV drama, I thought, which is like how we saw it on TV. So,
no, it wasn't.
Really?
I saw it at the Venice Film Festival, I think it was easily the best of these 10 films. And I mean,
really,
but it's broadly cinematic. I mean, it's got a wonderful widescreen cinematography, which kind of draws you in. It's got this kind of, I think, profoundly effective story arc, which kind of moves from something which appears to be leading you towards a kind of proto-Western and then somewhere considerably more sinister. Now, I think it's easily the best film there. I think it would be a very honourable Best Picture winner if it were to get in there.
Okay, maybe it's just because I saw it on the TV.
Well, it's funny when that...
These things can happen, yeah. It was just another thing on Netflix that I watched.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's interesting that what's probably almost certainly going to happen tonight is that a streaming service is going to win. Because Netflix, Power of the Dog was the favourite for 4 or 5 months, with Belfast, the second favourite. Belfast faded away because it didn't win anything, basically. And Coda, Sean Hedder's Coda, this film about a deaf fishing family in Massachusetts, has now come up the inside rail.
It doesn't sound great when you say it like that. And I did start watching and think, is this some kind of teen drama or something? I was in bits by the
it's
end
very
of it.
Moving,
I mean, God, I nearly cried about 10 times during it. It actually turns into the most beautiful film, doesn't it?
It's very nicely made film, it is, really. I mean, quite sweet, quite sentimental, but, you know, that's going to work with that electorate, you know, if you can get them to see it. But the interesting thing about this is, if it does win, then Netflix are going to be livid because they've basically spent the last 5 or 6 years, you know, pushing The Irishman, pushing Marriage Story, pushing Roma, and they've fallen at the last hurdle every time.
And then Apple
swoops
in.
And now it looks as if, well, it's 50-50, as I would say, but there's every chance the first streaming service to win is going to be Apple, who, despite being one of the largest tech firms in the world, have been really nowhere in the streaming wars to this point.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, we'll go back to Netflix. Henrietta, we have to talk about The Bad Vegan.
Oh boy, we do. Yeah. Fame, fraud, fugitives. This is directed by Chris Smith, who made Fire, the greatest party that never happened, which was also hugely entertaining. So I sat down to watch one episode, and before I knew it, I was on the fourth, and the house was in darkness. No one had any dinner, and I didn't know where the dog was. Yeah. You know, it's very beguiling, enticing series. So it's the rise and fall of vegan chef and Manhattan food star, Sarma Melangilis. So 15 years ago, she had a restaurant called Pure Food and Wine, and it was a really buzzy Manhattan hotspot. It was the forefront of the raw food movement. So think fine dining rather than hippie cafe. And then in 2011, she meets a man on Twitter who appears to be friendly with the actor Alec Baldwin, who she's already friendly with. And they meet in real life. And this guy is mysterious. His name is Shane Fox, apparently. He's a multimillionaire. He claims he works in secret military black ops. I mean, they always do, really, you know. And he says, I do what I do so people like you can sleep at night. You know, it's that sort of nonsense. And of course, soon he starts lying and manipulating her into believing he's serving some kind of higher purpose by testing her in increasingly erratic ways. And so in time, she is manipulated, she says, into stealing from investors. She stiffs employees, many of whom had worked with her for years and seem to adore her.
They love her, that's the thing.
Because
it
has, in 4 episodes, they have access to amazing footage. There's a really long interview with her, loads of employees.
Yeah.
Now, Shane Fox, his real name is Anthony Strangis, he declined to be involved in it. But they do have an awful lot of access to recorded conversations. She kept a journal, which is very handy because they now have the journal. There's emails, there's texts.
I've only seen one, but I would say I think this is up there with Tiger King or Fire Festival as like it could be the documentary everyone's talking about for the next 2 days anyway.
I think so, because there are these really interesting extra elements. He claims he can make her dog immortal, that he is somehow non-human and he's wearing a meat suit and he can make her immortal as a course of control script.
And the fact that we have added Alec Baldwin in there for sheer lunacy as well is fantastic.
It's really good.
Donald, will we do cinema, the one big release this week? You're recommending, kind of in the broadest sense of the word, the Michael Bay film Ambulance?
Yeah, I feel like I have to hand in my film critic's card, that as I'm, I've become an apostate, that I've decided to recommend a Michael Bay film. Though actually, I was kind of disappointed, because I went to see Ambulance, which is a remake of a Danish film, which is not something you expect from Michael Bay. Michael Bay, if people aren't familiar, is the director of the Transformers films and Bad Boys and Pearl Harbor and The Rock, and the master of cacophonous action in the broadest style. That when I went to see it, and I thought, I quite like this. This is actually, I mean, we promised a more intimate Michael Bay film, and it is intimate in the sense that, kind of, you know, General MacArthur is less intimate, War was Korea. You know, it's that, you know, it is not an intimate in the sense of kind of a small Richard Linklater drama in which people discuss their feelings over coffee. Like, it's enormous. It is still absolutely enormous. Okay. There are still helicopters in every scene, and half of Los Angeles is blown to bits. But you know, he's got himself under control to an extent. There is something like a story here. It's reasonably disciplined. And I thought, I quite like this. I'm going to be a real crank here. But actually, it's ended up with his best reviews in 25 years, his best reviews since The Rock.
So he'll probably tank at the box office then.
I thought the same thing. I thought, yes, it's going to bomb.
If the pointy head's like
bomb is the word for a Michael Bay film. But yes, if you are in any way at home to the action film, then I think you will enjoy Ambulance, which is on everywhere currently.
Okay. Henrietta, I love your more kind of genteel recommendations. Grayson's Art Club is back on Channel 4.
That's right, yes. Grayson Perry, popularly known for ceramic vases, tapestries and cross-dressing. He brings people together through art, and he sets out, he claims, to unleash a sort of collective creativity. I mean, it has a slight Tony Hart for grown-ups quality, but also what's not to like with that? I loved Tony Hart as a kid. It's hosted with his wife, Philippa, and Grayson's style can be a little over the top, his presenting style. It can be a bit kids' TV show, you know, all rainbow braces and talking to teddy bears. But in conversation with her, they're actually very insightful, talking about creativity and what it means. And they have star guests on. Joe Brand was on last week, Bill Bailey and was on the week before, and then the public submit artwork and then talk to him about it and talk about their inspiration. So as a way of showing people that art doesn't have to be controlled by institutions, and it doesn't have to be something that exists in a fixed place of a gallery, it's actually really interesting, and people seem to get so much out of contributing to it.
Okay, so a good thing in the world, it sounds like, with no edges to
no
it.
No edges,
or anything.
It's
okay.
Very engaging. Channel 4, Fridays at 8.
Okay, Donald, and you both mentioned this one, banned the Mary Whitehouse story on BBC Two Tuesday at 9 p.m. So Mary Whitehouse kind of invented cancel culture in a way, but she would be the very person who'd be raging against the woke generation now.
It was be very amusing to try and fit her into the current conversations that we're having. I don't know where she'd fit, but I'm very much looking forward to this. I suppose I can use the word notorious figure about her. That's certainly how the adjective that would be used by her liberal opponents, certainly. Founder of the National Viewers and Listeners Association, who launched a campaign against permissive society in the aftermath of the 1960s. And she was often laughed at and just as often vilified. She had the dubious honour of receiving her own spitting image puppet, who would sort of squawk censoriously in cat's eye glasses in a Midlands accent, an English Midlands accent, every week. The Mary Whitehouse Experience, which first gave a Skinner and Badil, was named after her, ironically. There was a pornographic magazine called Whitehouse in the 1970s and 80s, which was named after her. That's kind of the degree of response against her. But she was... It would have been wrong to underestimate her. She was a furiously good organizer, and however misguided she may have been in her views, she was a furiously good organizer and managed to make a lot of people who felt quite superior to her because they were from the urban elite. I found a lot of them actually, and in the end, being quite frightened of her, rightly or wrongly.
So and I think did she get a lot of things banned?
Well, I mean, probably not really didn't get that much banned, nor did she really change the conversation that much ultimately, because we basically ended up where we are today. And also, you look back, I mean, part of the difficulty with her campaigns was she had this issue, which you always have when people are complaining about stuff on radio and television, is they haven't seen or read the thing they're complaining about. And so, for example, one of her most famous cases was the case against Howard Brenton's The Romans in Britain at the National Theatre, against which she took a private prosecution, I think, if I remember correctly. And she hadn't seen it. But she didn't need to see it because she'd heard what was in it, and that was enough.
Okay, all right. So look, an interesting little...
Look, Ken Loach and people are turning up to talk about her, it should be fascinating.
Henrietta, we're against time, so can we move on to Henry VIII, Britain's, or Edward VIII, I beg your pardon, Britain's traitor king. So as much as you wouldn't be expecting to say the royal family and Nazis in the same sentence, Edward, the guy who abdicated, was a
That's
bit of an
old
Nazi,
yes.
Yeah?
But given what the Windsors have been going through recently, I wonder, does the Queen look back at her Nazi uncle as the good old days of royalty? This is a documentary on Channel 4 tonight and on demand from tomorrow. He abdicated in 1936. And that he was a Nazi sympathiser was nothing new. Even newspapers of the time regularly carried shots of him, photos and articles about him meeting high-ranking officials in Germany. But this documentary claims it'll reveal for the first time the full extent of his treachery in the Second World War, in that he was an active collaborator, which is a huge claim to make, including helping Nazis invade France in 1940 by revealing defensive weak spots. And his plan was to reinstate himself on the throne. I mean, there would have been a whole new Good series God. Of The Crown if that had happened.
Okay, that's Edward VIII, Britain's traitor king, Channel 4 tonight at 8 o'clock, as if the poor old royal family hadn't enough to be dealing with this week. Okay, thank you very much, Henrietta McCurvey and Donald Clark. That's all we have time for today.